Shastra-Parampuma Tayukta Atma Sambhutai Vishvedam-Samupadishat Sat Six Iti Thus Atra In this theory Api Also Bhutani The elements Pancha, five. Shastha, the sixth. Para, transcendental. Bhuman, supreme personality. Tai, with those five gross elements. Yukta, co-joined. Atma, from himself. Sambhutai, created. Shristva, sending forth. Idam, this creation. Samupasvisat, he entered within it. Translation. Other philosophers state that there are six elements, the five physical elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and the sixth element, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that the Supreme Lord, endowed with the elements that he has brought forth from himself, creates this universe and then personally enters within it. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami states that according to this philosophy, the ordinary living entities is included within the category of the supersoul. This theory thus accepts only the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the five physical elements. I'm going to read a few more of the shlokas because it's all pertaining to the same thing and there's no purports. So if you bear with me, I'll just read the English translations. So this is text 21. Some philosophers propose the existence of four basic elements, of which three, fire, water and earth, emanate from the four, the self. Once existing, these elements produce the cosmic manifestation in which all material creation takes place. Text 22. Some calculate the existence of 17 basic elements, namely the five gross material elements and five objects of perception, the five sensory organs in the mind and the soul as the 17th element. According to the calculations of the 16th element, the only difference from the previous theory is that the soul is identified with the mind. If we think in terms of the five physical elements, five senses, the mind, the individual soul and the Supreme Lord, there are 13 elements. Purport. According to the theory of the 13th element, the sense objects, aroma, taste, form, touch and sound, are considered byproducts of the interaction of the senses and physical matter. Text 24. Counting 11, there are the soul, the gross elements, the senses. Eight gross and subtle elements plus the Supreme Lord would make nine. Text 25. Thus, great philosophers have analyzed the material elements in many different ways. All of their proposals are reasonable since they are all present with ample logic, since they are presented with ample logic. Indeed, such philosophical brilliance is expected of the truly highly learned. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The material world has been analyzed in innumerable ways by innumerable brilliant philosophers. But the conclusion is always one. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, aspiring philosophers need not waste their precious time showing off their intellectual brilliance because there is little left to analyze on the material platform. One should simply surrender to the absolute truth, the supreme element, Lord Sri Krishna, and uncover one's eternal consciousness of God. Omagana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshura militam yena tasma shri gurave namaha. So the supreme element, the Lord Sri Krishna, one should uncover one's eternal consciousness of God. So before we start the class today, there's just notification that there is, it's also an appearance day, two special appearance day. One is not an appearance day, it's just a festival that's called the Hira Panchami Festival. Everybody heard of that one? It's on the calendar, Hira Panchami Festival. And we're going to read a little bit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita from about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. It's an extension of the Jagannath Festival. Everybody knew that? And it's also the disappearance day of Vakreshwara Pandit. Shivakrishvara Pandit was again an associate of Lord Chaitanya, and I'll read a little bit about him as well. So first off, before we start the class, I'll just read a little bit from Chaitanya Charanamrita about Hara Panchami. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So this is from Madhyalila chapter 14, text 07. The performance of the Vrindavan pastimes. So this is after the Rath Yatra. So we had Rath Yatra in Puri at the start of the week. And now this is a festival a couple of days later. So in the garden of his pastimes, the garden of his pastimes was very large and was named Jagannath Vallabha. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took rest there for 9 days. Knowing that the Hira Panchami festival was drawing near, King Pataparudra attentively talked with Kashi Mishra. Tomorrow, the king says, tomorrow will be the function of Hira Panchami or Lakshmi Vijaya. Hold this festival in a way that has never been held before. So he did this for Lord Chaitanya and the purport by Srila Prabhupada. This Hira Panchami festival takes place 5 days after the Rath Yatra festival. Lord Jagannath has left his wife, the goddess of fortune, and has gone to Vrindavan, which is the Gundicha temple. Due to separation from the Lord, the goddess of fortune decides to come and see the Lord at Gundicha. The coming of the goddess of fortune to Gundicha is celebrated by the Hira Panchami festival. Sometimes this is misspelt as Hara Panchami in the section known as Advaiti. The word Hara means to see and refers to the goddess of fortune going to see Lord Jagannath. The word Panchami means the fifth day and is used because this takes place on the fifth day of the moon. So King Pataparudra said, hold this festival in such a gorgeous way that upon seeing it, Lord Chaitanya will be completely pleased and astonished. Take as many printed cloths, small bells, umbrellas and chamaras as there are in my storehouse and in the deity storehouse. Collect all of them, small and large, flags and ringing bells. Then decorate the carrier and have various musical and dancing parties accompany it. In this way, decorate the carrier attractively. We should also double the quantity of prasadam. Make so much that it will even surpass the Rath Yatra festival. Arrange the festival in such a way that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may freely go with his devotees to visit the deity without difficulty. In the morning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his personal association with him to see Lord Jagannath at Sundarachala. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his personal devotees returned to Nilachala with great eagerness to see the Hira Panchami festival. Kashi Mishra received Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with great respect, and taking the Lord and his associates to a very nice place, he asked them to be seated. After taking rest, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to hear about the particular mellow of devotional service, therefore mildly smiling he began to question Swarup Damodar. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking. Although Lord Jagannath enjoys his pastimes at Dvarkadham and naturally manifests sublime liberality there, still, once a year, he becomes unlimitedly eager to see Vrindavan. Pointing out the neighbouring gardens, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all these gardens exactly resemble Vrindavan. Therefore, Lord Jagannath is very eager to see them. Externally, he gives the excuse that he wants to participate in the Rath Yatra festival, but actually he wants to leave Jagannath Puri to go to Sundarachala, Gundicha temple, the replica of Vrindavan. The Lord enjoys the pastimes day and night in various flower gardens there, but why did he not take Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, with him? Swarup Damodar replied, my dear Lord, please hear the reason for this. Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, cannot be admitted into the pastimes of Vrindavan. In the pastimes of Vrindavan, the only assistants are the gopis. But for the gopis, no one can attract the mind of Krishna. The Lord said, using the car festival as an excuse, Krishna goes there with Subhadra and Baladev. All the pastimes with the gopis that take place in those gardens are very confidential ecstasies of Lord Krishna, No one knows them. Since there is no fault at all in Krishna's pastimes, why does the goddess of fortune become angry? And Swarup Damodar replies, it is the nature of a girl afflicted by love to become immediately angry upon finding neglect on the part of her lover. While Swarup Damodar and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were talking, the procession of the goddess of fortune came by. She was riding upon a golden palanquin carried by four men and bedecked with a variety of jewels. The palanquin was also surrounded by people carrying umbrellas, chamaras, whisks and flags, and was preceded by musicians and dancing girls. The maidservants were carrying water pitchers, chamaras, whisks and boxes of betel nut. There were hundreds of maidservants, all attractively dressed with valuable necklaces. In an angry mood, the goddess of fortune arrived at the main gate of the temple, accompanied by many members of her family, all of whom exhibited uncommon opulences. When the procession arrived, the maidservants of the goddess of fortune began to arrest all the principal servants of Lord Jagannath. The maidservants bound the servants of Jagannath, handcuffed them, and made them all fall down at the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune. Indeed, they were arrested just like thieves who have all their riches taken away. When Lord Jagannath starts, this is a purport again by Prabhupada, when Lord Jagannath starts his cart festival, he gives assurances to the goddess of fortune that he will return the next day. When he does not return, the goddess of fortune, after waiting 2 or 3 days, begins to feel that her husband has neglected her. She naturally becomes quite angry. Gorgeously decorating herself and her associates, she comes out of the temple and stands before the main gate. All the principal servants of Jagannath are then arrested by her maidservants and brought before her and forced to fall down at her lotus feet. So this is the pastimes of Lakshmi Devi and with Lord Jagannath. It's actually said also that she actually breaks the Rath cart. She actually kicks it or chops a bit off the Rath cart out of anger. So these are unreal, amazing pastimes of the Lord. So the other thing that I just wanted to read, because I wasn't aware of this personality's great position in the Leela with Lord Chaitanya, is the pastimes, and it's the disappearance of Vrikshishvara Pandit. So I'll just read a little bit. Vrikshishvara Pandit is the fourth member of the Chaturvyuha. He is Aniruddha. He brought happiness to the Lord by dancing in the mode of Krishna. He would sweetly say to Mahaprabhu, O merciful Lord, give me 1,000 singers so I can dance. Radha's dear Shakhi Sirak Reksha also entered into him. So he was a great dancer. Sri Vrikshishvara Pandit reveals such great potency that he danced non-stop for 3 days. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote the following about Vrikshishvara Pandit. Vrikshishvara Pandit is the Lord's dearest servant who danced without rest for 72 hours. So you guys thought you were doing pretty well here this morning. Try for 72 hours. Where was I? Right, okay. And Mahaprabhu himself sang as he danced, and when Vrikshishvara fell down at his feet and said, O moon-faced Lord, give me 10,000 Gandharvas. I will be happy if I can dance while they sing. The Lord answered, you are like a wing. If I had another like you, I could be able to fly. So he went on. He was also present at the house of Srivas and Chandrasekhara, where he would also dance during the kirtan. Vrikshishvara was so dear to Mahaprabhu that when Devananda Pandit was able to receive Mahaprabhu's mercy by serving him, in this way he was able to become free from the offences he made to Srivas Pandit. Mahaprabhu explained how to atone for offences to a Vaishnava in answer to a Brahmin's question. This is another part. I'll just keep... here. The Lord said, this is about this Devananda, you have served Vrikshishvara, therefore I have come to know you. Vrikshishvara Pandit is the Lord's complete energy, and whoever pays homage to him attains Krishna. Krishna has made his home in Vrikshishvara's heart. Krishna dances in order to make Vrikshishvara dance. If any place becomes associated with Vakrashvara, it immediately becomes the equivalent of Vaikuntha and equal to all holy places. So when Mahaprabhu had absolved Devananda of his offences, then he instructed him with great affection. One who thinks, "I understand the Bhagavatam," does not really know the Bhagavatam's central meaning. On the other hand, an ignorant person who takes shelter of the Bhagavatam will directly perceive its meaning. The Bhagavatam is pure love. It is an incarnation of Krishna itself. It recounts Krishna's most intimate pastimes, recounting the Vedas and the Puranas. When Vakrashvara came to live in Puri, he would accompany Mahaprabhu, Advaita Acharya and the other devotees to Tota Gopinath to hear Gadadhar Pandit give discourses on the Bhagavatam. One should hear the book Bhagavatam from the devotee Bhagavatam. Gopal Guru Kuswami was Vakrashvara's disciple. Gopal Guru's previous name was Makaranda Vraj Pandit. Anyway, that just explains his history. Before leaving his body, Gopal Guru turned over the service of his Krishna. Oh, no, it's another part. Sorry. Vakrashvara's disappearance day is on the sixth day of the waxing moon in the month of Ashar. Ashar. So this is Vakrashvara Prabhu's disappearance day. Ki Jai. So now we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the purport here was mentioning that the absolute truth is the supreme element. Lord Krishna is the supreme throughout the whole understanding, and uncovered one, and by uncovering one's eternal consciousness of God. I'd just like to continue on with what I was preaching the other day. I was giving class just about the importance of passing on this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. I wasn't quite finished with what I had to say, and this whole point of what was mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam is that one should simply surrender. And following on from our last class, it's incumbent upon all of us, actually, that it is our duty as members of the Hare Krishna movement to save this world. This world is in need of saving, and it's upon us as devotees to actually do our darndest to bring people to Krishna consciousness, and that is the only panacea for saving this world. We should do this with all enthusiasm and all integrity to spread this movement. Srila Prabhupada's guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, made a point, and he told Prabhupada when he first met Prabhupada that all you have to do is preach this Krishna consciousness. It'll be good for you, and it'll be good for people that are listening to you. So there is an eternal benefit to preaching Krishna consciousness. And we have to be careful in our Krishna consciousness, not that we become spiritually lazy and become into a rut. This is for all of us. It's something that we have to be really mindful of. We have to, in a sense, when we become aware of the great potency of Krishna consciousness and how it is changing our lives, we have to become aware that we have to do something substantial for Srila Prabhupada. Each and every one of us. We can't leave it up to somebody else. We have to do something substantial for Prabhupada to actually make a difference in this world. We have to save this world. We have to bring in a new age of spiritual love and bliss. The whole Bhagavad Gita, actually, in a sense, is a classified ad that Lord Krishna is putting out there. And the classified ad reads, "Help wanted, preachers for Krishna consciousness." This is what the Bhagavad Gita is telling us. He's giving us this knowledge, and he's asking us to actually deliver the fallen conditioned souls by presenting the knowledge that we've received. We have to use all our brain power to spread this Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada's mission. Not thinking of anything else, not thinking of something alternative. That's Krishna consciousness. We have to put everything else out of our mind. If we're thinking of something else, then it's just selfishness, or we're just on the mental platform. We have to really focus on serving Srila Prabhupada and pushing on this movement. Every living entity, as I mentioned in the last class, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme. And every living entity is our brother and sister. Every living entity. And as I was mentioning, we're all part of Krishna's family. So, when one has this Krishna consciousness, he has to become a spiritual leader, a spiritual focal point. Whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, or whether you're a child, you have to take up the responsibility to actually go out and help people, help family, our family members, our humanity, all living entities. Because we're actually the only ones that can change the situation in the world. Today, there's the mundane topic that's in all the newspapers, how politicians and environmentalists are trying to save the world because they see that there is a major threat coming, that there's global warming, and this global warming is actually going to be very detrimental to human civilization. Whether that is a true thing or not is debatable. It really is. It's a debatable point. But it's interesting when we actually see what they're trying to do to alleviate this problem. You know, some people say that actual global warming is a fact. Other people say that it's actually just a natural cycle that the Earth is going through. But whatever the case, the devotee actually sees it as an opportunity for preaching. One interesting thing that I heard during the week, which was really fascinating, is that you know how they've had the Kyoto protocols and the discussions that they had in Copenhagen and all that to try and work out a consensus between all the different politicians. How are we going to stop this global warming? And basically the politicians just dropped it. They dropped the ball. Like in Australia, they just didn't do anything about it. It was all talk and all rhetoric. But then it was actually found out that if we were going to do something about global warming, it would cost a lot more taxes and people would have to pay a lot of money. And so this wasn't very beneficial for a politician to get re-elected, so they thought, let's just forget about that. But the scientists, in their understanding that this global warming is actually something really detrimental to humanity, were saying, what the hell is going on? You've dropped the ball. But the politicians are like that. Their only interest is to get re-elected and to somehow or other stay safe in their job. So what the scientists had done was they thought, well, how else are we going to present this? How else are we, if the politicians don't take up this message of global warming and try to change society, what do we do? Because people don't listen to scientists also. Scientists say, well, you know, just like we were reading about different philosophers, you know, this one has that sort of bent on a thing and another person has that sort of thought on it. So there's many different thoughts. So what do we do? But there's a fact. It's global warming. It's happening. So what the scientists did in one area in India, there was an Indian, there was a problem in India, a little bay area of a poor section of India, where a species of fish was being extinct. It was classified as something that had to be, it was on the endangered species list, was not to be killed, but what was happening in this little bay region of India, this species of fish, which was a whale shark, which is an endangered species, can't be killed, the villagers were killing this shark at a particular time of the year and using the whale shark for its oil and for its meat. And the scientists were saying, look, this animal will be extinct if we don't do something. And so what the scientists did was they went to the spiritual leader of that community because they couldn't do anything. The politicians couldn't do anything. The people said, no, we have to eat. We, you know, forget what you're saying about. And so they went to the spiritual leader of that region. It was a pundit, you know, a learned man. And they said, Pundit, you have to help us because, you know, we want to save this endangered species. So the Pundit actually said, okay, I'll talk to the people. So he gathered all the villagers and he said, we've strived so hard for our children when they get married and when they actually... Jai Prabhupada. when they get married, we look forward to them having a child and that we can become grandchildren, grandparents. So in the same way, this whale shark, if you see that all that the shark is coming here for is to have its baby in this area, in this bay area. This is the area where the whale shark has its baby. Now what you're doing is you're stopping the family of whales having their children here. And as much as you like so much to see your children and your grandchildren, the whale shark also has that feeling towards its children, and so you shouldn't kill it. So on a spiritual basis, everybody said, yeah, that's right, that's really callous to kill a pregnant whale shark when she's coming here just to deliver her children. We won't kill any more whale sharks. And so they cut this whole whale shark thing out of their diet, and not another whale shark was killed. What the point of it is that what I'm trying to make is that they turned to spiritual leaders for guidance and direction. So similarly it is, the community, the scientific community, is turning to spiritual leaders to actually solve this global warming problem. Now, as I said, whether it's a real thing or it's not a real thing, there's debate as to whether it is an actual threat to humanity or not. I heard the King of Bhutan say, yes, it is a threat. He said, I can see it. Two times a week, I'd go past Mount Everest. And he's an old man, and he said, I've noticed that Mount Everest is becoming more and more grey, so the glaciers are melting. So again, whether that's just a cycle in the Earth's history or not, it's another thing. But we as devotees can actually utilize this thing, which is prominent in society at the moment, for our own purposes, to act as leaders and to direct and guide people. So what we're doing is that, and we have to utilize our intelligence. During the week, I had the opportunity to meet the Premier, Mr. Brumby, and he gave the Hindu Community Council, which I'm the secretary of, he gave a grant for us to work on multi-faith and multicultural sort of projects. So one of the projects, I had a talk with our chairman, and one of the projects that we're hoping to do is to have a forum whereby we get all the spiritual leaders from all the different denominations and talk to them as to how we can help the community to overcome this global warming in simple ways in our own lives. The politicians are having no effect. You know, they build up, insulation vats, and then we find that so many houses go up in flames. They have the solar panels on their roofs, and then we find that there are companies that are exploiting the grant system, and so much corrupt things are going on. So by being a spiritual leader, by forming a forum of all the different spiritual leaders, we are asking the leaders to actually talk to their congregation and find out ways of how we can solve this so-called global warming problem. Devotees are the ones that are organising this. They're going to be organising that. The government is funding this project. This is so important that we're using our intelligence to actually help society and be seen as a force that's helping society. So what do we offer as devotees? What can we offer? Well, number one, we'll encourage people to be vegetarian. You know, this has been proven now that is very, very good for global warming and the environment if people would just simply go vegetarian. We can't expect everybody to be a vegetarian completely, because people are pretty attached to their way of life. But what we can ask is that one day a week you become a vegetarian. And this is now being recognised by Al Gore. In Al Gore's Academy Award-winning documentary, he didn't mention once the advantages of being a vegetarian. He has now since also agreed that just vegetarianism is the way to go, and if everybody would just be vegetarian for one day, it would be a great asset to global warming. So there are many different things that devotees can offer as solutions. Similarly, we have the Varnashram Dham. Prabhupada wanted that Varnashram actually take place. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we all have to run off to the country and live, you know, in sort of a rural environment. It simply means that, say for example, we could all have like a small vegetable garden at the back of our house and grow some of our own vegetables. If we did that, and we exchange some vegetables. Say, for example, Bhakti and I grew broccoli, and somebody down the road, a devotee down the road, grew spinach. We could swap things. what happens is everybody had that opportunity to just grow something in their backyard, be a little bit more self-sustaining. The major pollutant of this world is the fertilizer companies. They are absolutely polluting this world with their fertilization of their massive crops and their pesticides and so on and so forth. So what will happen? We'll reduce slowly in that area. So there are many different ways that the devotees could offer different ways of helping the global environment. Cow protection is another one. And we have to explain how that will be beneficial for global warming. So working with these other spiritual leaders, we are offering different advice. It's important that we do that kind of thing. So what it means is the devotees have to take leadership roles. It's imperative that we take leadership roles. During the week, there was discussion about Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy is everywhere, you know. And this is just on another point, but again, it's a point as far as leadership is concerned. Mayavad philosophy is everywhere. It was described how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that Mayavad philosophy is demoniac. And it's detrimental to spiritual growth if anybody hears Mayavad philosophy, and that's a fact. But Prabhupada also said that 90% of the population, 90%, nearly even 99%, if Prabhupada said that, is innocent. It's not demoniac, it's just innocent. They're ignorant. They have no idea, like we were. You know, personally, I came from a Mayavad background, and by the mercy of the devotees, I was able to understand what really the whole creation and life is really about. So, it's just that we didn't know any better at that time. So it is incumbent upon us as leaders to take a role to diminish this Mayavad philosophy. Now we may say, if we present Krishna consciousness, so many people become envious and they won't listen to us. That's not their fault. It's not their fault. It's just that there is no other example for them. You know, like say for example, when I do an interfaith program, when I'm dealing with other people of different faiths, there is a predominance, practically a predominance of impersonalism at any of these functions. You have people, and I don't mean to deride them, but you have people that are from the Baha'i faith, impersonal. There are people there from the Buddhist faith, atheistic. There are people there from the Satya Sai Baba group, impersonal. There are people there from so many different groups, impersonal. They haven't got an idea of what their relationship with Krishna is. You've got people there from the Jewish faith. Study the Jewish faith recently. We say that the Abrahamic faiths are actually personalists. When you really analyze the bottom line with the scholars of Judaism or Christianity or Muslim faith, it boils down to impersonalism. They have no real understanding that Krishna is a person, that God is a person, that our relationship, our sole reason for existence, is to have a relationship, a loving relationship with God. Not an idea. So this is going on. So a Krishna conscious teacher or a Krishna conscious leader gives the complete Vedic understanding, the complete all-attractive alternative. Now, we have to say that these demoniac Mayavadis that we're dealing with, you know, a lot of people say we should avoid them, should run into the Ganges straight away. Yes, that may be the case. But they are also our family members. They are part of this family of humanity. And it is our duty to also try and encourage and help these people out of their ignorant situation. Because ultimately we understand that being the jiva soul captured within this body, what they're really searching for is Krishna. They're really searching for Krishna. They're really searching to love Krishna, to love the Supreme. And we have to be there for them. We have to be there for them. This was Prabhupada's mission. This was his sole engagement. How can I pass on this knowledge to other people? And we have to do that with compassion, with enthusiasm, and in all circumstances, try to teach them and make them understand. And if we don't, if we're not there, then we're worse than the Mayavadis. Because there is a disease of impersonalism and atheism out there, and if we're not there to offer an alternative, then it's basically we're worse than the Mayavadis, because we have the solution. We have to make an effort to actually bring people to this understanding of loving Krishna. Teach humanity. And it has to be a campaign. Just like we're going to get an announcement today that there's going to be an election, a federal election. And you see how these people swing into action as far as getting their person to be the top boy or top girl, as it is at the moment with our Prime Minister. They will do anything. They will use all resources to get their message out. They will use every trick in the book. They'll have their spin doctors doing all sorts of things with little slogans and campaigns and advertising, and they'll saturate the emails, they'll saturate websites, they'll contact people through Twitter and through Facebook, and that's how Obama won, you know. And, you know, there was a great hope, this guy offers so much, and actually he hasn't done much, you know. But there's a campaign to get their party, their person, their political leader to win the election. We have a campaign. We have a campaign. Prabhupada's campaign was to eliminate atheism, to eliminate Mayavad philosophy. But we don't do that in a way that is detrimental to our standing. It's not that we criticize or we lampoon. We help people. We let people come to the point of understanding that Krishna consciousness holds the truth for humanity. So we have to be as resourceful and as forceful and dynamic. We have to use every cell in our brain to think of different ways that we can actually present this Krishna consciousness. At universities, at our preaching centers, in our next door neighbors, in our shopping centers, in book distribution, so many different ways. Men, women and children have to take up the mantle of being a leader. This is so important. Prabhupada wanted each and every one of us to be leaders of this Krishna consciousness. We cannot leave it up to just individual people. We all have to participate. We all have to be strong and work on this campaign. Think every day, how can I change? How can I develop? How can I influence people? Shall I set up a website? Shall I do this? Shall I get on Twitter? Shall I write editorials for a newspaper? How can I do it? You know? This is Krishna consciousness. That's actually Krishna consciousness. That's what we're here for. So just as an example, one small example, you know, again, my service that's been given to me is this interfaith program. There are now nearly 10 interfaith groups throughout Melbourne. 10. There's Casey, there's White Horse, Kingston, Monash, Werribee, you name it. They're all over the place. And from working with this interfaith group, as a leader, you're the shining light of true Krishna consciousness, of true knowledge. And the thing is, these people are sincere, and they automatically are drawn to your philosophy because you're living it as a devotee. When I had this presentation of the grants by the Premier, there was a great emphasis how the government is wanting to really develop this interfaith multicultural program in society. We have to be at the forefront of this. We have to be the people that will present personalism, that will present the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person. If you go to any of these interfaith programs, you can be assured there is a Buddhist there. There is a Sai Baba there. There is a Christian. There is a Jew. But where are the true lovers of Krishna? I've had a little advertisement up on the notice board. And believe me, Prabhus, I'm not criticizing you. I had one person come to me and say, Prabhu, can I help out with this interfaith program? One. Anamesh, is he here? He was the only one that said, can I help in some way? It means just being part of the community, maybe one meeting a month. And in that meeting, if there's a couple of Hare Krishna devotees there, you know, they'll talk about, you know, what can we do? We want to have a festival over here and we want to do this over there. You get an opportunity to actually talk the philosophy to the rest of the group. You get an opportunity to be an example of what it means to be a devotee. That you are a compassionate person, that you're a loving person, that you're actually a friendly person. That you can dispel the different ideas that people have about the Hare Krishna faith. This is what's required. And then if you actually participate in any of these groups, what happens is there are so many benefits. So many benefits. Number one, you get an opportunity to distribute books. They constantly have different festivals where they'll say, oh, Prabhu, could you please have a bookstall? Can you present your philosophy? And there's also opportunities for catering. Oh, yeah, the Hare Krishnas are on the interfaith team. Can you cater for our next function? Prasadam distribution. Every time you go to one of these gatherings, you can give out some rasgullas or rasmalais and, oh, Indian milk sweets, lovely. We understand from Prabhupada's teachings, this is potent preaching. It's encapsulated potent preaching. Prasadam is so potent, it will win people over. So you get an opportunity for prasadam distribution. You get an opportunity to network. If we're wanting things to be done, if we're wanting to set up other centres and so on and so forth, by networking, people will help you, automatically help you. You'll get that opportunity. You'll have funding from the government. They will actually pay you to preach. I just picked up a cheque from Mr. Brumby. $10,000, $2,000, thank you very much. And he was happy to give it to me, you know, through the Hindu Community Council. We're going to do projects here with that, you know. We're going to be presenting, we're giving prasadam and preaching. And he, when I came up, you know, he realized, because, you know, I sort of stand out. Everybody else was wearing suits and ties and all this kind of stuff, and there's this 6 foot five, 6 foot six white streak, you know. And as he came in, he acknowledged me, and then as I came up for the check, he said, so, you're with the Hare Krishna movement? I said, yes, John, I am. And he said, very good, you know, I'm really interested, and blah, blah, and shook my hand. Here's your check, you know. I said, thank you very much. We need thousands of those people in that community, in that sphere, working within the community. Oh, you're with the Hare Krishnas. Oh, very good. Here's some more money. Do your preaching. That's what we want, to further our preaching. But we have to be in it to win it. We have to be there. So funding is there. We can get the funding. We can make devotees. We can make devotees. Because we understand that actually everybody wants to be a devotee, really, but we just have to somehow or other tap in. And if a person likes you, if you befriend the person, they'll want what you've got. When we're mixing with the community, they see, this guy's got something that we haven't got. This girl's got something that we haven't got. You know? What is it? And they'll ask questions, and eventually they'll become devotees. So we have that opportunity. So innocent people are not being led correctly by our politicians, by our scientists, by our teachers, by so many people. We have to become the teachers. We have to become the leaders of society. There is no alternative. When you walked into this house, Prabhupada's house, and you surrendered to Srila Prabhupada saying, thank you very much for giving me that knowledge. His thing is, I'll give you the knowledge. But the only way I'll give you this knowledge is if you pass it on to somebody else. Otherwise, it's not worth it. And that is real Krishna consciousness. That is real Krishna consciousness. Not just that we're here at the temple and it's ecstatic kirtan and it's, you know, we've done so many Bhakti Shastri courses and so many Bhakti Vaibhav and we know so many shlokas and we know this and that and we know how to do the pujas and we know all that. Use that knowledge to spread Krishna consciousness. Use the information that you've learnt to spread Krishna consciousness, to pass it on to somebody else. Don't just sit there and be complacent. Don't just sit there and say, oh, I'm very nicely chanting here. Oh, I've learnt 10 shlokas. Think of ways of how you can present this to other people. Exercise your brain. Every one of us, our God-given talents. Exercise your brain. How can I do more? How can I research more? How can I get into influence people more? This is Krishna consciousness. When we say thinking of Krishna, you have to be Krishna conscious, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that we're constantly thinking of the little blue boy in our head or the gorgeous Lord Chaitanya. It means, how can I spread this knowledge of Krishna? That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. Constantly thinking different ways, exercising our brain in every way possible. Oh, I could do that at work. I could plant the seeds by doing such and such. I could ring up this and that. I've got a bit of extra cash this week. I'll put a little advertisement in somewhere. Just think of different things. Even kids can do it at school. You know, how can I present prasadam? Maybe I can put some prasadam here. How can I do? So many different ways. That is what's meant as a Hare Krishna devotee. We are part of the Hare Krishna movement. It is a movement. It's on the move. And if we're not on the move, we're stagnant. You know, in those, again, we see from different traditional religions. When they become complacent, you know, like even in Christianity, you have the two. You've got the fundamentalists and you've got the sort of just the run-of-the-mill Christian, very... Well, yes. And they study their scriptures. Oh, yes, and in Matthew 22, Jesus says such and such. And they, you know, whoopee, where's their congregation in their churches? You go to a traditional church and there's just like maybe two old ladies sitting in the front. What did he say to you? Isn't it? But then you go to a revivalist centre like a fundamentalist Christian organisation like Hillsong. They are vibrant. They are vibrant. They are enthusiastic. They are so incredibly enthused to get more people to their church. If you ever want to see what real enthusiasm is, go to one of these revivalist centres. Go to one of these fundamental Christian places and have a look how fired up these people are. Varanaka, my dear friend from Sydney, he is completely enamoured by how they preach. This is what he wants to do, you know. And he gave me all these different books and tapes and CDs on how they generate an interest in their Christian tradition, you know. It is amazing. You walk into their place and you are treated as a friend, like they've known you for the whole of your life. Oh, hey, sit down, you know. And they watch people who's a little bit more interested. And it's just amazing. And the enthusiasm, and they're thinking constantly. Now, they have great political presence also. They're now a member of parliament in the federal Senate. You know, where the Family First Party, which is again a fundamentalist Christian party. And they are the ones that are vetoing laws within this country. They have that potency. Where are we? Where are the devotees? We've been around now for 30 years. We've got to start making inroads. You know, some of us should be going up for council elections. And we may say it's all mundane. Oh, it's boring, it's mundane. Not if you see it as a mission to spread Krishna consciousness, it's not. It is enlivening, it's enthusing. When you work within the community to actually enliven people in their Krishna consciousness, it is our duty for Srila Prabhupada. It is our duty, we have to do this in all different ways. So a Krishna conscious devotee has to use their knowledge. We already love Krishna, now we have to show the rest of humanity how we got to do it. Because it isn't going to happen by itself. Although Krishna says it's going to happen, we want to be a part of it. We want to be a part of it, a major part of it, you know. And we're doing this song for our Bhajan band, which is the old George Harrison standard, you know, My Sweet Lord. And In the verse there, it says, I really want to see you. I really want to go with you. This is George, you know, presenting how he wants to go with Krishna. He wants, really wants to see Krishna. So if we pass that message on, you know, it'll be good for us and it'll be good for everyone else. But we have to take to this message. We have to understand what it really means to be Krishna conscious. It doesn't mean that shlokas are running around in our head and that we're thinking of Krishna's pastimes. That's okay. But really, we have to use every strategy, every single waking moment of the day to think, how can I push on this movement? And you see it in our spiritual teachers, in our gurus. All of them in their own unique individual ways are thinking of ways, how can I do, how can I... You know, you have so many great souls that are our gurus. So in respect to them, we have to think of ways and help them in their mission to spread this Krishna consciousness everywhere. So now that I've got that off my chest. Thank you very much, Prabhu. So are there any comments or questions at all? Yes, Prabhu?
You did a wonderful job in Pushpaya.
That's nothing.
So much Pushpaya you gave.
No, that's nothing. We should have been there right from the start. But it's a start, yeah. And we can be there for other things as well. But people should think that up and then take the initiative. Yes, Prabhu?
We've seen that Prabhupada, through his teachings, seems to have a real interest in preaching to the intelligentsia in society, mm-hmm. reaching the academics,
yep.
and reaching the intellectuals and the philosophers. And yet, when we get these intelligent minds come and associate with us, they have questions that pertain to their current scientific material understanding of the universe and the world, how it came about.
Yeah.
And sometimes through our philosophy and through some of the, I guess, more didactic statements that Prabhupada has made, such as with the moon landing or other more controversial subjects, they find that that's something that they simply cannot get past given their very strong studies in
yeah.
that subject matter. And that prevents them from, in a sense, taking to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get past them?
When you have a person of that caliber, it's not necessarily that you have to win them over, that they understand the philosophy completely. Just make them your friend. Just make them your friend. Just say, well, you know, this is the way my spiritual master taught me, and I understand your position, and it may be difficult for you to understand that, but, you know, you're a good guy, and I'd love to have a meal with you, and there are so many other different aspects that you can talk about, you know. So make them your friend. But generally speaking, and then by being your friend, they may, I mean, there are aspects that even I, you know, as a 30-year-old devotee, still think, well, geez, you know, they did land on the moon, didn't they land on the moon? I put that in the too hard basket. And I know that Srila Prabhupada will one day reveal to me what the truth on this situation is, because I have faith in everything else that he's taught me, you know, in everything else as far as being the spirit soul, as far as being a lover of Krishna, as far as service to Krishna. He's given me the truth on that. It's a realized truth. It's not something that's just learnt. It's actually experienced, like I spoke before about the practical side of Krishna consciousness and the theoretical side. Prabhupada gives both. So there are some things within Krishna consciousness that I think, oh, I can't quite get around that yet, you know, how the universe is structured and stuff, because of limited brain capacity. But I have faith in Prabhupada that eventually I'll learn the truth. So you just, you know... But if it's something that you can't, you know, because they may go into a whole jargon of scientific knowledge, you can talk, get Dhrita Karma or somebody like that to talk to them about it, but if they're really sincere. But they'll only do that if you're their friend. If you're their friend, then you say, well, look, I've got this other guy and he's said this and this about it. Maybe you'd like to have a listen to him.
Would one valid reason be that, as Prabhupada himself stated, Guru is
interiorly
omniscient? Mm-hmm. Can we make that without sure. bending
Guru? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Prabhupada never said he had the answers for everything.
Yeah.
Hridayananda Maharaj says that too, you know. He said it wasn't that Prabhupada knew everything materially, but in the same token, spiritually, Prabhupada was totally aware of who we are and where we're, what our destination is. So, yeah. Any other comments or questions?
Probably because it's quite an inspiring speech. Thanks for that.
Sorry? Okay, so I'm taking notes, and anybody that's interested in the interfaith, I'll get your name and address after this. Okay? Come and see me. I need people for Casey, Whitehorse. What's the other? Oh, there's heaps. Wherever you live, you can fit in, okay? Thank you, Prabhu.
My boss is actually a Scientologist, and I accompany him to Church of Scientology.
Oh, yeah.
Every month.
Do you?
They share like their books, they share their videos and things with me. And I watch their videos, and they present like spirit soul, and they present like, you know, super soul and all these concepts so well. And in a way that, like, you know, an ordinary person from the road, he can understand by watching those videos. Like, and they are not too philosophical as well,
really?
But they are very mature and like modern style of presentation. So we have much better philosophy.
Like, absolutely.
A far better philosophy. And we have so many talented people as well. We can understand that by saying like Devamrita Maharaj and Vidna Maharaj and all those Maharajas and so many talented people. What I'm wondering is maybe we should also present in such a way like they are doing it. They are getting their message across with those kind of videos and that kind of presentation. And their marketing is fabulous.
Well, I mean, if this is coming to you in your mind and you've had the opportunity to see these people and see what they're doing, start adapting it. Write a small script. That's obviously, it means that Krishna's telling you to do something about that. If this has sprung up into your mind, it hasn't sprung up into my mind, but you've been the one that's had the contact with the Scientologists and you've seen how they've done it, then this is your area that Krishna is saying, hey, listen, Prabhu, maybe you can do something. You know, utilize what they've got, take the gold from a filthy place, and work it out how we can do it. If it's successful for them, then it can be successful for us. Does that make sense? You can't just say, oh, well, you know, Indra Dumna Maharaj and Devamrita Swami, you know, they should do something like this. Or no. In football terms, the ball's been handballed to you. Now you've got to run with the ball and kick a goal. And why not? You have intelligence, you have the same capacities as anybody else. You can do it. And Krishna will inspire you. And it will happen. And there are so many, there's millions of different areas. Just like that.
Thanks, Prabhu.
Pleasure, Prabhu. Anybody else for a comment? Yes, Prabhu. Oh, sorry.
As you said, we should try to make friends and then
Yep.
And sometimes, if you are my good friend, why don't you come to my house and let me enjoy this and that?
There
are so many reasons. So if I say, like, somehow or other, if I get some excuse or some reason that you have to come,
that's a good point. That's the same with me. You know, we just got an invitation for a dinner, a pre-Ramadan dinner for Aniruddha and myself. They wrote, as in the spirit of brotherhood, in the spirit of friendship, would you like to come and share dinner with me? I sent back an email. Yes, our requirements are no meat, fish or eggs, no onion, garlic. And under those circumstances, if you're cooking for me, this is what I would like. I'd be more than happy to come. Go. You offer it. You offer the prasadam. You offer the food. Prabhupada once was invited to a person's home, and they cooked a meal for him, you know. And I'm not sure whether it had eggs in it or it had onion and garlic or something. Or onion and garlic. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, it's got onion and garlic. Yes, so eat. Sometimes you have to, for the preaching, you know, you have to do some things. And yeah, friendship is one of sharing. You know, and the meal thing is a big thing. The sharing of a meal. But there's nothing to stop you. If they're following and they're honestly doing this for your, you've given them a really nice meal and they want to return the favor, which is normal human activity, that you go there And you sit and you say, I just have to say grace before meals. And pray to Lord Krishna, my dear Lord, I know this is not the best prasadam, but I'm here preaching for you. I'm here trying to win this person over in friendship and love. And I have to do this. They're not cooking anything that is detrimental to me as far as meat or anything. And of course you can't eat that. That's like telling a Jewish person to eat non-kosher or for a Muslim person to eat pork. They wouldn't do that. So they're offering you a vegetarian meal. You offer it and you eat it. And then they become your friend. But if you keep on saying, oh no, I can't eat your food, they're thinking, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with this guy? You know? We've eaten his food. Our show of friendship is to offer him a really nice meal. And he's refusing. That's not real friendship. So if you're a preacher, you take risks. This is a fight, you know? This is a war with Maya, with the illusory energy, you know? We have to fight. And sometimes we take risks. But specify what you want and say, this is the only way I can come because of our religious principles. And then you offer the food. Okay? How could I possibly do the service I'm doing? You know, I have to. Yes, Sokha Prabhu? Does that make sense to you, Prabhu? Is that clear? Yeah, sorry. Yes, Sokha.
So right now, it's quite questionable, the philosophy of atheism, you know.
Of what?
So-called new atheism.
Atheism?
You know, yeah. With spiritual doctrines and all that kind of focus.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the reason for popularity of this new so-called repackaged, you know, atheism? And also, how can we counteract it?
They have fantastic spin doctors. When you actually listen to Richard Dawkins, their arguments are useless. It's not even scientifically backed up. Scientists now in quantum physics are actually saying, yes, there is a creative intelligence behind it all. And so this atheism, they've just got incredible PR factory. That are, you know, their books and everything like that. But you read their books and there's actually nothing in it. There's nothing to hold. But for people that don't have anything else, oh yeah, that makes sense. Why do you think Buddhism is so popular? Buddhism is one of the fastest growing religions in the world. You know? And it teaches atheism. But basically speaking, a Buddhist is a gentle, nice, loving sort of person, you know. And people say, oh, I like a gentle, nice, loving sort of person. You know? And then they, what's the philosophy? And then they top up the philosophy by saying, actually, there is no God, it's all just a nice blah, blah. You know? But we have to be there. We have to give the alternative, you know? And it's okay to distribute books, that's one thing. But it's more important to actually follow up that book with personal teaching, personal interaction. We have to develop our own PR machine and counteract these people. When Richard Dawkins was having his seminars and stuff here, and they had an atheistic seminar after the Parliament of World Religion, how many devotees actually wrote to the newspaper and said, you know, this is absolutely a nonsense, you know, from the scriptures that it says and science and whatever argument you wanted to take to counteract the atheist? Did any devotee here put in a public, an editorial letter to the editor or anything like that? Why not? Why didn't we do it? We can. Yeah, Bruce?
Well, I think it's important to present it correctly. For example,
yeah.
All of this discussion on the eighth was, you know, when this atheistic convention was taking place, and there was a lot of enthusiastic supporters from the atheistic side, and then some Christians, for example.
Yeah, hello, here come the Christians again. Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the comments, and most of the time they would come across as very kind of close-minded fundamentalists,
mm-hmm.
sort of people, and that would only give strength to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say,
yeah.
Look at these people. This
yep.
is what they're like, and
yep.
this is what we're against. So
absolutely. That's
because
right.
Because they're at the forefront, the general populace thinks they represent the entirety of
yes.
One of their main arguments is how could a loving God inflict such punishment on humanity? That's their argument. Every time it's their argument. How could a loving God, you say you've got a loving God and loving Jesus and all that, how could he inflict this suffering on poor innocent people with tsunamis and plagues and worlded, you know, how, if there is a God, how could he let this go on? Then he's not in control, you know. They have no idea about the law of karma. They have no understanding of it at all. And it's such a simple thing. If you're not sure on how to present it, then you talk to other people. How can I write a letter to counteract this atheistic point of view? You write people like Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, who's giving lectures in Sydney at the moment. You write to Dave and Rita Swami and say, how could I counteract this? I want to do that. Number one, they'll be so enthused that you're actually taking up the mantle to fight, that you're thinking and using your brain, how can I counteract that? And number two, it gives a whole different point of view across, you know. So like that, we have to think, how can we do things, you know? How can we push? We cannot just stay in the malaise. We cannot just be content and have this beautiful Melvin Mandir here and just think, this is it, we're all cool and nice here, you know, and bring some more people in, another little friend from there, and, you know, we all just have prasadam together. No! Our business is to present Krishna consciousness worldwide and to save this world, to save humanity. Any other comments or questions? Bhakti?
Yeah, so one is you actually can't make anybody do anything.
Absolutely.
So you can't turn everybody into devotees.
Good point.
Unless they want to, so therefore the real advantage of preaching is to change the desire within them.
Yep.
Right? So that they want to change.
Yep. Very good. Thanks, Guru. Anybody else?
Actually,
come?
Richard Dawkins has a page on Hare Krishna on his website.
Has he?
Yes.
What does he say?
Some article, actually, I don't remember. He has written an article on Hare Krishna, and that he was basically putting forward his arguments about like Hare Krishna faith, like what we believe.
Ah.
And they were all baseless. Yeah. Like,
oh, can you email me that? Who would like to answer that? Yeah, okay. You send it to him, he's going to send something back to Richard Dawkins. Why not? He's just a numbskull. Actually, in the academic world, he's called Dickie Dawkins. He's not very, you know. So, yeah, you write him back, Prabhu. I'd like to have a look at it too. This is a fight. Let's go for it. You know, we only have this one lifetime. Let's have fun with this. You know, Prabhupada, when he was passing away, you know, he said, they said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you should stop translating." He said, "Are you kidding? I want to die like Arjuna on the battlefield. You know, in the last breath, still preaching." That's our leader. That's the founder Acharya of this movement. That's who we want to follow. You know. Not that we're content to just be nice devotees. We want to get out there and really mix it with people and really shake it up. We can do it. If the fundamentalist Christians can do it, and the Sai Babas can do it, and the Buddhists can do it, why the hell can't the Hare Krishnas do it? You know? We can do this. Okay. So, Harsha just wanted me to mention this, that we're going to put that up. It's a Vedic Leadership Seminar by Bhaktivedya Purna Swami, and it's at the Sydney Temple at Crow's Nest from the 7th or 8th of August. So he wanted me to mention that, so anybody is more than welcome to go to that.
It's yep. Not in the temple itself.
Oh,
isn't it? It's in a
cultural
community center.
Okay. So this will be posted on the notice board.
We've got some flyers.
Yep. Thanks for that. Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Vyasarashima Bhagavatam ki,
Jai.
Gaura Premanandi.
Jai.